The thing about machine learning, it's never one size fits all because it's tied to the use case, it's tied to the data, it's tied to the outcomes you're trying to get out of it. And I work with a lot of these companies, and almost always it's 70% product, 30% customization for every customer that they go into.
Welcome to SaaS Connect, the SaaS Partnership Podcast, brought to you by the Cloud Software Association. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com.
Hey, everybody. My name is Naresh. I lead AI partnerships for Google Cloud. And I'm going to focus on three things today. I'm going to talk to you guys about what we are working on. I'm going to spend a little more time talking about how we are taking a partner-first approach when it comes to AI specifically, and how we are working with SaaS partners, especially to take our technology to the customers and work with them as the primary go-to-market channel. And then the third thing is I'm going to give you some examples of how partners are doing it and then urge you guys to work with us on this, right? This is a really small group, so let's keep the questions open. You don't have to wait for me to complete my presentation. If you have any questions, raise your hand. Let's have a conversation and make it more interactive. So I want to take a pulse check in this room and get your take on, like, how many of you really think this AI thing is a total hype and it's going to be here for a couple of years and it's probably going to die away? Anyone? Why am I not surprised? We are in the biggest bubble of all, right? No, most forward-thinking part of the world. How many of you are actually actively using AI in your technology, in your products? Awesome. Very cool. So I think if you look at what some of the forward-thinking, you know, people in the industry are talking about, Mark Cuban thinks the next $1 trillion company is going to come from someone who takes AI and uses it in ways that we've never thought about. And then Eric Schmidt thinks that the biggest IPOs are going to come from companies that adopt AI in really interesting ways. And Sundar, he thinks of Google as an AI company, and he's basically putting AI into every single thing. But his comment is not just restricted to Google. It's about how people are leveraging AI and how machine learning is transforming the way in which people are interacting with the world. The smart speakers that we have today, the Google Assistants, the Alexas of the world, are doing it already, and it's going to happen more and more. But if you look at how Google has been thinking about it in the last 4 to 5 years, this is sort of a view into the total number of repositories that's using Google Brain models. So it started off with, like, you know, a handful of products using it, but then over the last few years, pretty much every product that Google has been taking out to market is using machine learning and Google models, in Google Brain's models in some capacity. So every product that we are bringing to market is made in a way that it's smart, it learns from the interactions, it's enabled in a way that it's not a very programmatic product, but it learns. And one of the biggest products where we've seen success is Google Search itself. The biggest gains we've seen in the search results is based on machine learning as a part of it over the last couple of years. But a couple of examples, Google Translate. How many of you use Google Translate? This was a lifesaver for me. When I was in Nicaragua a couple of years back, I mean, I know 3 words in Spanish, right? But I like to go out and eat in local shops, and all the menus in Spanish, and I have no idea what it is. So I was totally reliant on this. So I can vouch for the fact that Google Translate saved my life, and I didn't starve to death. But it's an amazing product, and I see this getting used in so many different ways in so many different countries. Google Photos. Who doesn't use Google Photos? What? So this is an amazing product. This is probably the most popular product. When we talk to customers and partners about this, this one gets everyone's ears perked up. This is, like, one of the best things that's happened in a long time. Like, the biggest problem we had 3-4 years back was, like, what do you do with your photos? It's in folders sitting in some PC, and there's no way for you to go back and see what that picture was to go search for it. Now it's all searchable, and then you get videos come out of it, and those snippets that come out, and it tracks people from different ages. Like, it knows that my son, when he was born, to where he is now. It's amazing product, and this technology is also one of those that we are commercializing and taking to customers in different ways, and I'll talk about that. The third one is Gmail Smart Reply. How many of you use this product? This is amazing. Like, I pretty much start all my responses with Gmail Smart Reply and then build on top of what Gmail tells me. I'm just waiting for a time when it just doesn't give me one sentence, but it gives me the entire text of the email that I want to do. I'm sure it's going to happen at some point, but it saves so much time. Just imagine the amount of time you spend in emails. Now, if it can be automated in some capacity, I think we are at the beginning of what's possible here with Gmail. Talking about AI, Google, I have to talk about AlphaGo. How many of you know about this AlphaGo thingy? So DeepMind, which is one of the acquisitions Google did like 3-4 years back, they are at the forefront of AI research. They have about 200 data scientists, PhDs, from some of the most reputed universities and colleges. And they've been building a lot of reinforcement algorithms that have been applied to games, both digital games and physical games like these. And the last time we had a breakthrough like AlphaGo was when IBM Watson defeated, the Deep Blue defeated Garry Kasparov. There's a huge difference between chess and AlphaGo. Chess is a very deterministic game. As in, you take a picture of, or you look at the formation of all the pieces in a chessboard, you can actually map out all the possible next steps coming out of it. Or you could go 3 to 4 layers and you could build a graph on what are all the different possibilities, and then you can go choose the one that's most in your favor. But AlphaGo is completely different. There are two main differences. One is the total number of moves in an AlphaGo game is more than the total number of atoms in the known universe. So there is no way you can build a graph for AlphaGo. The second thing is the most interesting thing for me, because if you go ask a Go player why they made a move, they will tell you that it felt right. There's so much intuition involved in playing that game. It's not a deterministic game like chess. So now you're at a point where a machine is able to make a move based on its gut feel, which is a really interesting place to be, because now you're not reliant on rules. You are able to make it based on what the right thing feels right. And it's not just about games. Like, what we did is we took that technology, reinforcement algorithm that was used for AlphaGo, and we said, okay, how do we make that available for a real-life use case? So what we did was we went to the data centers, we took sensors from like pretty much all the different equipments used in the data centers, right? HVAC systems, cooling systems, fans, servers, and a whole bunch of different sensors, and then we fed it into this algorithm. And the goal of that algorithm, this thing that it was supposed to optimize, was reduce your energy spend. Now, you have to understand one thing. Google's data centers were already one of the most efficient data centers. Like, there was a ton of engineering that went into it. But then when we went and turned this on, and when we let the machines tell us what the settings ought to be for each of those different equipments used in the data center, we saw that the energy consumption dropped by 40%. That was a huge deal for us. Now we are taking this technology and we are working with partners to see how do we go make this available for everyone else. So what's the first thing we are doing? Russell talked about APIs, and I completely agree. Like, APIs are the way to democratize anything, right? Like, that's the way for people to consume it in a way that it's super easy. The developers just take it, plug it into their application, and you're truly expanding the scope and reach of a product. And you need APIs to do that. And we feel very similarly for AI. Our first step in democratizing it is going to be by turning those into APIs. And we've done that for a lot of different products. And I'll spend a little bit of time talking about the product portfolio. But then our first step is to turn this into APIs. The second step is to go partner. Because what we are learning is AI is most effective when it's a part of a workflow, when it is contextualized. So let me give you an example. OCR is awesome. You can take an image and you can extract textual data from the image. But when you contextualize it in the context of processing receipts, it's even more impactful. Actually, that's where the real value lies. And that's where partnerships are super important for us, and we are going partner first in many of our products. The second thing is, it's one of the biggest things we've learned, especially around AI, is if you look at the last 5-10 years of innovation, the innovation has been around mostly in the digital space, right? Like IT and marketing automation and sales automation, like all the systems are getting smarter and smarter. But when you go to the physical world, the logistics, supply chain, you know, extracting oil from the ground, all sorts of use cases that are tied to the physical world, it wasn't really changing as much as it was changing in the digital world. But what we are seeing with AI, let me give you an example. Like, the most obvious example is Waymo, self-driving cars. It's going to change logistics in a way that we haven't seen in decades together. The way in which Chevron and Exxon and some of the biggest oil companies are drilling and being safer about how they extract energy, being smarter about understanding damages to equipments and buildings, we are getting smarter smarter and smarter about how we take satellite images and how we extract information from satellite images. So the impact of this is not just tied to the digital world, it's also getting percolating itself into the physical world. And we think that machine learning and AI can impact every single application. Again, this goes back to who's touching those customers, who's touching those workflows, and partners are first in that journey for us. This is a snapshot of the, you know, people who are working in the tech and white collar space. If you take a survey of all the people, you see that, you know, data science researchers, the deep learning researchers, the likes of Jeff Hanton, who just got Turing Award today, by the way, there are 10,000 people in the world. These are the researchers who are going beyond the scopes of what's possible. And then you look at the machine learning experts who really know what they're doing. They're, you know, maybe 2 million people. But the vast majority of people who are actually touching applications and using applications are developers and the business users. Now, the goal is, how do we take everything that we know and make it available to business users and developers? So a quick snapshot of where Google AI is today. This is from last year. We haven't updated the numbers. We have a conference next week, or actually week after, and we're going to be talking about new numbers. But as of last year, we had 15,000 customers, more than 100 partners who are leveraging our technology in their products, and we are working with them very closely in multiple use cases, tons of 2 million members in the Kaggle community, and more than 20 products launched. We have a whole new bunch of products that we are going to be announcing this year. But then, really quick, summary of our portfolio. How many of you know about our portfolio, or you've just heard about it a little bit? I can spend, depending on how much you know and how much you want me to get into the details, spend a little bit of time or take 5-10 minutes talking about it. Would it help? Okay, so three pillars to our portfolio: building blocks, platforms, and solutions. Building blocks are, think of the basic components of what's required to go build something big. The human perceptions, the ability for a human to see and understand the universe, the ability for a human to speak, and the ability for a human to understand written languages. That's what this portfolio is based out of, the building blocks. This composes of vision, video. We also have something called AutoML technology. So one example of where a customer is using an AutoML technology is to customize the vision product to fit their specific need. So there is this windmill manufacturer who wants to understand, you know, how the damage is to the windmill. And it's a very difficult problem, right? Like, these are at 100 feet height. There's no way for you to go back and see what's the damage to the actual fabric of the windmill. So they take pictures of it, and they've trained a model to understand what the damage, extent of the damage is. And we enable them to do it with AutoML vision. Same thing with natural language, right? If you go talk to a energy company, the concept of a bit is very different from what people understand as bit in this room. So being able to train a model to understand that, hey, whenever someone says a bit is broken, they actually mean that a physical bit is broken. That's just a very simplistic language, but ability to train a model to understand a term in the context of a broader communication. That's where AutoML technology comes to play. The second part is where you have the data scientists who know what they're doing, and we give you all the tools to just go build whatever you want to build. And then the third one is, I'll spend a little more time on this. So AI solutions, what this means is, again, going back to the concept of contextualizing AI, what we are doing here is we're basically taking everything that we know, we are packaging it up in the context of a particular solution or a workflow. A good example is contact center workflow. So if you think about what a contact center agent does, let's say an agent is on call with someone for 5 minutes. That 5 minute, the information exchange for that 5 minute is stored in two places. One is in the contact center agent's mind, like he knows or she knows what she spoke about. And the second is, if she's good, she'll go put it in the right system, CRM systems and whatever contact center systems. But most often that doesn't happen. What if you can take that and you can, you know, listen into that conversation, you can transcribe what's being discussed, you can also pick up on specific terms. Someone is called about a broken screen or my phone doesn't work. Then go look up the knowledge base and tell what the person needs to do. That way the agent is not wasting time going and searching a knowledge base. Or let's say someone says my VIN number or my IMEI number is blah, blah, blah. Being able to take that, extract that from that conversation, go search the right systems and come back and say, hey, this phone is within warranty and this is what the warranty status is. Right? That improves the efficiency of that agent considerably, and it also captures a whole bunch of information for an enterprise to actually go derive insights from that. And that's what we are doing. The second thing to note here is this is a partner-driven launch for us. So if a customer comes in and tells us, I want to use your contact center AI technology, we're going to tell them, go work with one of these partners, because that's how we are surfacing this technology. So this is a partner-first launch for us. And if you see how we are going with this, we are going to go build solutions around every vertical. We're going to look at all the use cases and build solutions. But then our go-to-market around these are going to be very partner-driven. We are going to go work with some of the players in the retail space and manufacturing space and healthcare and life sciences and embed our technology into their product and go to market with them and support them in the process. A couple of examples that I want to highlight. This is one of my favorite partners. What they really do is they're creating a digital twin of the Earth. They use satellite images, drone images, IoT sensor data, and they're creating a digital twin so customers can go model different things in that digital twin. For example, based on the construction data in China and the container shipment in the ocean, what amount of production should a company in the US, like Caterpillar, plan for? Or what kind of supply chain information can you gather from that? A better example on the agriculture space is based on the production for corn, what's the yield going to be 3 months from now, and what the spot price of corn needs to be 2 to 3 months from now. A really interesting use case. They run the entire thing on Google Cloud and use a whole bunch of our machine learning technology, especially around AutoML vision and those things. This video is really cool. So the way it works is there's an agent, American Home Agents is a customer, the customer talking to them, and the agent is able to pull information about the customer, plus based on the conversations, they're able to come up with the right knowledge articles that the agent uses to communicate with the customer, and then also fulfill a whole bunch of operations in the back end automatically based on conversations without the agent going and touching multiple systems. If possible, I'll send you guys the link, or you could just search for Vonage Google Cloud Contact Center AI, and it's on YouTube. And the last one here, Woodrick is doing some really interesting things. One of the biggest problems for any product manager is getting customer feedback real time. There are two types of feedback, right? One is objective, second is subjective. Objective is easy because you're just asking them to score on a rate of 1 to 10. How do you like this thing? How do you like this feature? But you don't really understand why someone doesn't like something. And then that goes into a textual field where people are typing and stuff. Now, the only way to extract that information is by someone reading it and then translating it into something that, or the PM sitting and reading a whole bunch of comments. So what Woodrick has done is they've built a NLU model based on Google Cloud AI where it can go and look for specific terms. It can understand the sentiment of what the user is talking about. What issues are they talking about? What are the specific problem areas? Which part of the product don't they like? And automate that whole value chain. It's a really interesting use case, and it's been very successful for them as well. So with that, I just want to say one thing. You guys are working on some really, really cool things. Probably the next big IPOs are going to come from this room, so would love to partner with you guys. And if you have any questions for me, more than happy to take the questions.
So first of all, you guys, I think your questions. So AI does feel like pixie dust from heaven. It's a very magical term in the hype cycle. But it's very specific kinds of algorithms and use cases. I think you put a slide up explaining them all. But for those of us who are non-technical, but thinking about the opportunities, we could maybe get a competitive advantage. How do we navigate the specific offerings and see use cases? Like how can Google help us wrap our heads around what you can do?
That's a really good question. I mean, we are coming out with products every single day, and it's kind of hard to keep up too. So two ways to do it. One is, I mean, we have a conference coming up. We're going to go really deep, depending on your level of understanding. There are going to be sessions which are for data scientists, and there's going to be sessions for developers. So if you plan to be there, that's the best place to do it. There are also a whole bunch of videos. Everything that's in the next conference will be put on YouTube. But then our website is a great place to start. But simplistically, I said like three areas to look at, right? Building blocks, developers, and then solutions. And that's how our content is also organized. And anytime we come out with something, we are going to put it out there. That's another way to do it. And then the last thing is, once you become a partner, we have a whole bunch of resources for partners, which actually go a couple of levels down. And we kind of give you access to trainings, certifications, and even work with you in case you're kind of trying to take that technology and embed it into your products. So there's resources that are available to partners that go beyond what's available to the public. So that's another way to possibly get access to all that technology.
And so a lot of us have been around in the industry for some time, good names here, like Box and Zendesk and whatever. So companies who have established data sets and workflows are not .AI companies. They're currently adopting AI in the future. Like, how's a good place to start? Like, where's a good angle or use case, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so typically the way we ask partners and customers think about it is, right, like, pick a high-value problem, but that's not, and put a boundary around it, right? Like, so, for example, everyone has a contact center. Everyone has a contact center, right? That's a really good use case to go after, and that's a very measurable use case, and you can also put boundary box around it, and you can see immediate success. But pick something that's impactful, and pick something that's contained, and pick something that can show immediate value. And then once you have that, get a first project going, and then show the value, and then take on bigger things. Like, sometimes customers come to us and say, oh, I want to automate my IT help desk. I'm like, yes, that's awesome that you want to do it, but there's so much complexity associated with it. There's so many different types of machines. Each one's running different versions of software with different patch levels. You're taking on a problem that's so complex that it's going to take you forever to do it, and then you're going to lose faith in this whole thing. Instead, take something smaller, say, like, you know, chatbot. I want to automate my customer engagement or my sales engagement. And that's an easy problem that you can go solve. And then you pick on bigger problems to go work with.
Do any of you have AI built into your apps right now? And does any of you want to do AI, but don't really know how to wrap your head around it? Right. And so, like, for you, like, what do you want to do with AI?
Well, it's a massive amount of data, so we can better serve that up to our customers.
And internally in your organization, who would run that project? Or, like, have they wrapped their head around it? Is that going to be you?
Probably be me, yeah.
Have you started working on it, or do you know?
Learning slowly. We would need to bring somebody in, I think, to really do it properly.
And so have you looked at the Google Cloud API yet?
I have been shown it. I've looked at it. I want to do it. I just don't know where to start.
Yeah, I think this is a good question. So how would someone like this, like, get a human to help them out? Obviously here, but anywhere else.
So I think we need to understand what the problem is. What do you want to get out of that data, right? Like, what's the business outcome you want to drive? And then we can look at that and say, hey, is this something we can maybe go work with some of our existing capabilities? Is it a productized thing where you could probably, if it's just around, oh, you know what, I want to do some clustering, that way I can understand the different categories of data, or I want to do some regressions on top of it. Those are easier problems, like BigQuery, if you've heard of it, has inbuilt ML capabilities now. So if your data is there, it's like running a SQL, and you could do clustering regressions on top of it. But then if you're going really deep and you want to derive more insights, then we need to talk. Maybe bring an SI who's specialized in it, or if you have a team, a data science team, maybe we could sit down with them and have a conversation on what they're really trying to do. But again, it's not a one-size-fits-all. That's the thing about machine learning. It's never a one-size-fits-all because it's tied to the use case, it's tied to the data, it's tied to the outcomes you're trying to get out of it. And I work with a lot of these companies, and almost always it's 70% product, 30% customization for every customer that they go into, because everyone's data is different and everyone's use case is different. So I understand your pain. I think it's start with a simple problem statement and then work off of that and then get some specialized SIs to support it if need be, if you don't have the right skill sets in-house.
I think this is probably the most powerful topic and opportunity for all of us in the coming years. And I'm curious, with the digital transformation of channel technology, and there are channel technology vendors here, what opportunities that you're seeing, are you seeing any examples yet of channel tech vendors or partners working with your AI technology?
When you say channel tech, could you explain what that
is? Well, it could start with PRM systems, it could be AppBind, it could be, you know, any technology that out there is starting to help automate what you do in channel management for vendors that are leveraging the channel and using technology to automate many of the processes that are in place today.
I'm not very familiar with PRM systems. I need to go look it up. But we are seeing areas where partners are taking, like, some of the things that they're doing is enabling partners to talk to one another, connecting the dots between different channel partners. And, you know, conversational AI is getting used quite a bit in those types of use cases. We're also seeing a whole bunch of, especially when it comes to sharing leads with channel partners and enabling more go-to-market and collaboration, We're seeing technologies like RPA come into play where you don't want systems integrated because of compliance reasons. You don't want to share stuff, but then external systems like RPA enable some of those technologies, communicate with one another. I'm not sure if I addressed that question specifically, but maybe we could talk offline. I'm not very sure of what PRM systems do.
Just one clarifying for the home audience. RPA, what does it stand for?
Oh, RPA, it stands for Robotic Process Automation, and it's a very interesting area where they are essentially automating software robots to understand screen layouts. So instead of companies trying to integrate systems and have systems talk to one another using APIs, what if you can emulate a piece of software to understand the screen, understand the layout of the screen, and perform what a human does, right? Like take this field and go put it in this field or transform this field in a certain way. So it's enabling a lot of companies to go into the digital world faster, like innovate faster, because you're not bogged down by, oh my God, I'm running these legacy systems. I have 15 systems. How do I go make them work with one another? And then API is not the answer for everything, right? Like it's a big project in itself. And what that helps them do is, and I brought that up for a channel partner's use case, because almost always partners want to share leads with other partners, but then you can integrate the systems. There's a lot of security issues with it, but this technology helps you to like just look for specific things and then share information with the others.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Naresh, thank you so much for
thank you.
Sharing the future with all of us.
If you like this and want more great insights on software partnerships, you've got to rate, like, and subscribe. And join us at thecloudsoftwareassociation.com. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com. We'll see you on the next episode.